Hello, this is Jay Nemro. You're listening to The Life Autistic. This is episode number 631. I guess I'm going to call this a little bit of a recap. So, you know, for a thing, it'll be a little bit of a recap of some of the things I've talked about before, but haven't really, but just lightly brushed over recently. This is so you don't have to feel like you have to go and get the entire collection of episodes, unless you want to. I'm not telling you not to. But, so that you can kind of know what I've talked about in the past. Sometimes I get into ruts, and people say, well, that's all he ever talks about. It must be the only thing he talks about. And sometimes it's good to review what I've talked about in the past and go, oh, this guy's probably got a little bit more range than that. He's just, you know, wandered off onto the topic. We can always go back to the old topics. They're still there. I still think about them. And if you want me to speak on one of the old topics, I'd be glad to. Because I think they're still relevant. Every time I think that I've kind of grown out of something, and if I think about it for any length of time at all, I find out that often I haven't, you know, that thing hasn't been rendered irrelevant by new information or new thinking. It's still practical. It's still good. So anyway, if you want me to come speak to your group, whether it's about what I've been talking about lately or something I've talked about in the past, the phone number to call is 1-575-461-2716. One, of course, is the country code. Whatever international code you need to stick before the country code, please do. But one is the country code, then 575-461-2716. It's in the United States. You'll get an answering machine. Please leave your information. Don't keep calling back hoping at some point I will pick up the phone. I don't. If I'm going to respond to you, I will call you back or email you back however you want me to get back with you. And I'll get back with you. That's kind of how it works. I have to screen my calls because, you get lots of telemarketers and you just get a lot of stuff that you don't need to handle right at that second. That's a great wonder, I think, of an answering machine, is that it allows you to prioritize things. When you're immediately right there and you're talking to somebody live, they get to kind of invade whatever you're in the middle of. And they get to take preeminence. You know, unless you're rude and you put them off. This way I don't have to be immediately rude to people. You know, if I'm in the middle of doing something, they can leave their message, I can get the information, and at a time where it makes sense for me to be responding, then I can get back to you. Which works, I think, for all of us. You know, it may offend people if they can't just immediately get my ear and get my insight or talk to me. But that's life. And that's just the way my life goes, and I get to, you know, I'm sorry. That was one of the first things I started talking to people about when I finally opened my mouth one day. It's a very simple concept. I pay for my phone. Therefore, the phone is for my use. I refuse to be a slave to my phone, a slave to the whim of anybody calling and being able to have my immediate full attention whenever they want to. You know, unless it's a busy signal, that's what happens with phones. So I got an answering machine, and I've had one ever since. And its biggest thing is to screen calls. Now, if it's an important call and I need to get right back with that person because it's important, sometimes I'll pick up the phone right in the middle of them leaving a message and say, okay, I'm here, talk to me. But by and large, I don't, you know. And that is not because I don't care about you. It's not because of any of those factors. It's usually because I'm busy with something else. You know, we're busy people. We've got a lot going on. And we can't just be distracted at your whim for anything else. I find that's difficult right now. There's a few people who will just come by at any given moment and expect to be able to take up however much time they want to take up with me. And I have to say that I'm somewhat hypocritical about this, only because my religion, it doesn't really force me to be this way. I'm supposed to go out and do something called home teaching. And home teaching, well, teaching involves going out and visiting families. Now, many of the families that I have wouldn't even give me the time of day if I called and tried to make an appointment ahead of time. I find it difficult because most people, a lot of the people that I have, want to sit and talk and chat and yada, yada, yada. And so the appointments I make, well, you always take long. You know, they will only stay for about 20, you know, 15, 20 minutes. And it's like, well, they want to talk for an hour. Sometimes I can break away at 40, you know, 40 minutes. And so I've always found it difficult to make appointments for the simple reason that, you know, people are going to chew me up. So I tend to break my own policy when it comes to home teaching because I tend to just kind of drop in on people. Or try to. Luckily, I'm very fortunate to have people that don't seem to mind particularly. Or at least the ones that let me in, though. I don't know how the others feel because they don't even open the door. You know? And if they don't, I'm not going to give them a hard time. Maybe I need to take that extra effort and actually make the phone call and say, I'm really sorry. If I just kind of invade your time and your privacy, I apologize. Can we set up a time to take care of this? To make sure you're doing okay. Most of them just say, oh no, we're here on the phone. That's good enough. This is a good enough visit. Have a nice day. And it's like, I don't know if I can count that. You know, there's certain rules of engagement. And one of the rules of engagement is a phone call does not cut it for a visit. So I'm kind of impelled to try and do better than that, even if the people on the other side really don't want it. It's troublesome. But that has to do with that. I'm the kind of guy that I would rather you be announced, number one. And number two, if it's not convenient, I don't mind taking the option of saying it's not convenient. You're going to have to come back some other time. And in the future, it'd be really nice if you could call and let me know when you were coming. So I could say either yes or no. Now's a good time, now's not a good time. And my basic thing is to say now's not a good time. But that's just being kind. It'll never be a good time. You know, I value my privacy, private person. Strangely enough, you know, people go, how can he be private when he was wanting to talk, and he was wanting to go out and do things, and stuff like that. And you go, well, no, that's the time that I've already set aside for serving other people. Fulfilling other people's needs. I find that I like, and almost, I don't know if it's a need, but it seems to be one, copious amounts of private time. Myself, my wife, my family. You know, I need these things. It's what makes, you know, last time when I talked about capacity, it's what gives me the capacity to do some of that sort of outreach stuff. If I constantly had a stream of people coming in and going out, I would get, number one, grumpier, you know, because I don't like to be bothered particularly. I don't like visitors much at all. I tend to have a bad attitude toward them. And I know that sounds kind of funny given how I do home teaching, but I only do home teaching the way I do because that's the only way that seems to work. And when it comes down to home teaching, it almost seems to be a stress as to how much have you done? Has it gotten done? And it's really not considered whether this kind of thing is wanted by other people. You know, I don't mind my home teacher, you know. I'm grateful, number one, that he usually plans ahead and he comes by. You know, there's other people who say, my home teacher hasn't come in 3 months. I'm so angry and upset at them. And it's like, well, why don't you go the next step and encourage them to come? You know, set up a time with them instead of waiting for them to set it up, as if you're not following protocol. I'm the first guy that says, hey, you know, if protocol isn't fulfilling your needs, break it. Don't just sit there and, you know, well, that's not the way it's supposed to go. It's like, oh, it's like dances. I used to go to dances, and my kids go to dances now. Back in my day, the big thing was, you know, and in times before, was women never asked boys to dance. I'm glad that's changing. To a degree, you know. I guess it's somewhat of a kind of a interesting nostalgic thing that kind of warms my heart sometimes to see boys take the initiative and go ask a girl to dance. But if you were say a girl, for instance, under those circumstances, and you were weird about the protocol, but you were angry because no boy is asking you, you know, and you're sitting there indignant, upset, angry, feeling, you know, unloved, whatever. You know what you need to do? You need to go out there and ask those boys. But that's not right. And you go, so? What's the most important thing here? The fact that you're angry because people aren't following the protocol? Or is the more important thing is that you're getting to dance and have a good time, and who cares about the protocol? Plus, once you start dancing and having a good time, boys start noticing that, A, she likes to dance, and that helps them get over their anxiety, I think, about these things, because I was always anxious about it, and I'm grateful for the wonderful girls that saw a shy guy that was kind of a wallflower and said, come on, let's dance. To the point to where I could ask girls to dance when I wanted to dance. And it just was wonderful for everybody involved. It kind of ends up being like that, you know. Don't wait for these things to come to you. Even if culture says, no, it's improper for you to go out and get these things. If they don't come to you, you know, then you're not supposed to have them or something. And you go, no, I want this stuff. I'm going to go and do what it takes to get it. You know, go ahead. Now, if it's against the rules, I mean laws, you always have to be careful about that. Anyway, God, you know, I don't think I've really gotten down to the recap about Zenith, about the other things. I'm quickly running out of road. I'm almost to my destination. Should I even bother? Let's go ahead and do it, because I called it that, and it would be really sad to have called it this and not at least done a little bit of it. Let me talk a little bit about Zenith. Zenith is what I came up with when I decided one day, or when I'm considering, and I'm still considering it. You know, one doesn't say, oh, this is the way it is. I don't know what the truth is. I hope I'm getting closer to the truth. But what I think is that autistic people, when I first began this podcast, one of the big reasons why I first began it was to express my whole idea about Zenith. And it was rooted in ways of looking at autism. And I see other people kind of going in this direction too a little bit. Maybe I have a slightly different take, like I typically do on almost everything. But I almost break what our culture calls autism, what the psychologists call autism, into two pieces. There is, what are the inherent traits of these people, and what are what you would consider to be malleable disease, disorder-ish type things. I separate those two out and have decided that those two are separate things. What I call those inherent kind of almost genetic traits, and I usually equate those with the abilities, you know. And I'll tell you that I consider one of the abilities, and our culture tends to poo-poo this as an ability, it tends to look at it as some kind of weird disorder, is obsession. The ability to obsess, which our culture doesn't like, but which I think is eminently useful. Now, you know, and, oh, well, anyway, let me not get too far into that, except to say, you know, here's some of the traits, you know. The obsessiveness. The fact that the mind is just wired differently, and so there's a different perspective that comes from that. I see that as a feature of Zenas. And Zenas is that one kind of genetic, or, you know, there really isn't a good term for what defines that. And then okay, so that's one part. The other side is disabilities. Now, I used to talk about it as if there are special disabilities that certain groups of people have. Black people have more of a propensity for certain diseases and problems than white people. White people also have certain propensities for other things. You know, and these are known traits. You know, and you can make them, you can pull these from definable groups of people. You know, even one that's as touchy in a politically correct way as skin color right now, you know. And I said, you know, the traits that we often see that often get marked as autism that we, you know, mark down, I tend to put them into the whole camp of these are the diseases or the disabilities that are more prevalent among Zenith people with that obsessiveness, people with that, you know, with that different wiredness, that different worldliness. That's actually what Zenith means. It's a Greek term. It stands for three or four different things. One of the meanings is a stranger or a foreigner. Sometimes it was even used in the context of an alien, as in extraterrestrials, in some context. And all those things are kind of close to how autistic people feel sometimes. Those who can express themselves, those who can, you know, those who have faculty to do this. I will say right up front that I have not been diagnosed with autism. In the autistic culture, I would be called a self-diagnosed autistic, or Aspie. And some people make wild distinctions between the two, some people don't. And that was part of the reason why I came up with the whole term Zenus, was because of the fractious nature of people trying to find identity among themselves, and they still tend to look toward that disability. You know, I'm an Audi, I have these problems. You're an Aspie, you have some of these problems, but you have some of those problems too. And to kind of get away from that and say, let us not define ourselves by the illnesses and disabilities that we often have in ourselves just because we are what we are. I would rather be defined by what we are rather than almost the cultural problems that come from what we are. So that's how I came up with Zenith. And Zenith has to, and I did better definitions. You can go back if you're more interested in a deeper sense of what the definitions are. I haven't changed them particularly since then. I seem to recall there was the four O's, or it was the three O's. I'm not sure if I stuck the four or three. I don't even remember what they were. I know that being obsessed was one. I always thought was the whole term obscure. Odd was another one I got, but that one's kind of weird. That one's, you know, that just defines a basic sense of weirdness. And that's just relative to other people. And we would talk about what kind of a world, if there was a world of just people with Zenith traits, how different would it be? I would have to think that we would have more of a servant class that would take care of our needs. When I think about Zenith people, I think of the medieval college or of the medieval Catholic Church, and how certain people were attracted to monastic life or an academic life, and the fact that they had these traits was honored, had some value to the larger world, so much so that, you know, you would get past the fact that these professors were absent-minded. You would get past the fact that, you know, like me, you know, I've always been called scatterbrained, horribly so, horribly scatterbrained. But, you know, in a world where they said, you know what, we need to give this person some help with scatterbrain, you know, they may need an appointment clerk to help them remember where they need to be. If the world even worked that way, there could be whole worlds where there weren't any appointments. Because you would go and you would see somebody, and you guys would sit for hours and talk about some esoteric subject. You know, try to gain the body of knowledge. Debate about certain aspects of a sparrow's wing, maybe. You know, trying to approach truth, because the culture valued that pursuit. And so they would throw resources at it. You'd have a housekeeper, because Zenith people are notorious for not being able to keep up house very well. You know, you'd have a housekeeper to do that. And I could see from the medieval college, from the medieval, not really from the monastic orders particularly, but there was a lot of that life that was a contemplative life, especially depending on which group you were with. And I'm sorry, that really sings to the Zenith way of being. Once one gets past, you know, autistic people get so hung up on their disabilities, having to try to help other people understand them and stuff like that, that they don't, oftentimes they don't get beyond that. And I'm trying to do that myself. Get beyond that to what I contribute to the world. Not to keep bugging the world about how I could contribute, but actually getting around to it. I'm going to make this contribution. That's called moving on, going on to the next level. And I'd love to get to the point to where I make enough money so I can have a housekeeper. I may have an assistant that takes care of just the mundane stuff that I don't really like to be bothered with, or that I really suck at doing. I would love to have that. And wouldn't it be a wonderful world for somebody who's been defined as autistic? I tend to call them Zenith, and if they have disabilities, it's a Zenith person with disabilities, one of the Zenoi. That if we had a world geared that way, now I don't think you could have a world that was strictly Zenith. I think Zenith and normal people go together. Each one serves the other in various ways. Hopefully we would provide for those people who, I guess, didn't have anything better to do. Did that sound bad? I don't want to sound bad. I don't want people to feel badly about that. Those who... It's only because of my Zenith outlook on it. I would never want to have kind of a servant job. Other people don't seem to have a problem with it and even seem to like it. You know, they're afforded a lot of money and they get a lot of free time when they're not needed. You know, and I don't mind the fact, you know, I'm paying you all this money. I'm not going to work you 24 hours a day. It says, I just want some basic needs fulfilled. I want to have, I know I need food, I need water, you know, to prevent illness. I need to have a place that's basically clean. You know, that's kind of what I need. And that these things, although our culture tends to say that you're in huge trouble because you can't handle those yourself, or you don't seem to do a very good job at it, and they tend to, you know, either poke fun at you or to demean you or not give you certain opportunities because of your apparent inabilities, you know, that there's a certain payoff to being like that because you're thinking those high and hopefully noble and hopefully useful thoughts that typically evade normal people. I think you find in the halls of power, you will find Zenith there, if only as advisors to powerful people, so that they can say, well, you should go at it this way. And you go, well, that's really different. I wouldn't have done that. And you go, well, that's what you pay me for. It's to give you a different perspective so that you can be wiser. You know, we are almost those wise counselors, or could be, to those who want wisdom, who want a wise counselor. You know, kings used to want that. You know, nobles, people like that. Now, since we've gotten rid of most kings and nobles, and I'm sorry, as a culture, we tend to don't have much respect for wisdom or the pursuit of it. Whether we actually get there or not is another question. But what ultimately happens is, do we even care as a culture anymore? I have to say, by and large, we really don't. On to my destination. That was a little bit about Zenith. We're going to have to do a few more of these, I bet, to try to just come back up to speed, even though I'm just brushing over it lightly. You can go back to the old stuff. I think this discussion was around the late 530s, the early 540s, in the episodes where I talked a lot about this, when I was really digging deep into this and trying to find something to say. Now, I'm not saying that I agree with all that stuff now, but I'd have to say that I haven't given thought about it lately because I've been wandering into other paths. Another thing that I think is a Zenith trait is the fact that, you know, even though we can concentrate on something, our interests may wind around. I know mine does. As being the king of the wild tangent. Actually, not the wild tangent. When I see a connection between one thing and another, I'll often go after that thing that I see a connection from. You know, and then people go, well, he was talking about this, and now he's talking about that. And you go, I jumped because of a connection I saw. Or for some other reason. Anyway. Feel free to go back to the old ones. They are now in the archive section, in Archive 1, a different feed. If you go to the website, which is Autistic, A-U-T-I-S-T-I-C, I think I spelled it right, autistic.quix.us, you'll get to the basic. It's a very sparse homepage. Its only purpose is really so to really be a pointer to the feeds. You'll see the second feed. and which is the first archive feed. As more episodes come up, I'll be creating more archives, you know, archive 2, archive 3, whatever. And it's just so that you don't have a huge monstrous feed, you know, feeds are only supposed to be so long, and it's better if they are not huge. And so we do that. Let me get the contact numbers one more time. You can call me at 1-575-461-2716. And that's, I typically reserve that for people who want me to come speak to a group. If you have anything else, or if you just prefer an email communication, the email address is autism, AUTISM, at quix.us. If you just want to look at the rather sparse website, well, you can actually just go to the website altogether. I have several. Well, not really several sites. I have two or three servers that serve different purposes. And the one I'm pointing you at is very simple. It's Quix, Quix.us. You know, how simple can it be? And it has a link there for the podcast. And to other things, too, mostly things I've done further in the past. Anyway, I'm Jay Nemro. Thanks for listening. Feel free to contact me. And this has been The Life Autistic. This has been episode number 631. And let me see where my pointer is. Have a great day.